All right, so we're diving deep today into a Supreme Court case. Kind of flip the script on how we think about privacy, especially when it comes to our cars. Ruckus v. Illinois, 1978. So picture this: a robbery, a high-speed chase. Suspects are caught, police search their car. Seems straightforward, right?
I mean, on the surface, yeah. But this case goes way deeper than just a normal traffic stop. Ruckus is so interesting because the guys in the car didn't own the car or the stuff the police found,
Interesting.
a rifle and some shells.
Oh,
They were
well, yeah.
just passengers. And that one little detail sparked this legal battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
So the scene is set. We got a car full of passengers, none of whom own the car or the evidence. So what happened next? Did being passengers affect their rights at all?
That's the million-dollar question the Supreme Court had to figure out. Could these passengers who didn't own anything still challenge if the search was legal? And the court's answer really surprised a lot of people.
I bet. What did the court decide?
So the majority, led by Justice Rehnquist, basically said, nope, they can't challenge the search.
Wow.
And this decision really changed things because it shifted the focus from legitimately on premises to whether they had a legitimate expectation of privacy.
Okay.
It's subtle, but that one change had massive implications.
Can you break that down for us? What does legitimate expectation of privacy even mean? Like in this context, and why is it so important?
All right, so think of it like this. Before Ruckus, if you were legally in a place, you could generally assume you had a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Right.
But Ruckus muddied the waters, especially when it came to cars.
Yeah.
The majority argued that cars are different. They're inherently less private than homes.
Okay, why the court make that distinction? Like, what's so different about a car?
Well, they pointed to a lot of factors. Cars are mobile, often out in the open and
Right.
subject to a lot of regulation. They even mentioned things like how you often park your car in public, how visible the interior is from outside, and how mechanics have to get into your car for repairs.
Yeah.
All this adds up to less privacy, they said, compared to your living room, for example.
So basically, they were saying that by choosing to be in a car, you're automatically giving up some of your privacy.
Yeah, that's one way to interpret it. And they went a step further, saying this is especially true for passengers. They argued passengers don't have the same control over the vehicle as the driver or owner, so their expectation of privacy is even lower.
Wow, so that's a huge shift. Did they give any examples to like illustrate this?
Yeah, actually, they did. In the opinion, they use the example of someone just visiting a house versus someone who has a key and stuff there.
Okay.
The visitor wouldn't have the same expectation of privacy as, like, the resident, right.
Right.
And they applied that same logic to cars, saying that passengers are more like visitors than residents.
Okay, I see their point. But hold on, you mentioned that was the majority opinion, which means some disagreed, right? How did the other justices react to this legitimate expectation of privacy, especially for passengers?
Oh, the dissenting justices were not happy. They saw this as a huge hit to Fourth Amendment protections, especially for passengers.
Okay.
Justice White, for example, used some really strong language in his dissent,
Oh.
called it open season on automobiles, suggesting this ruling would give law enforcement way too much leeway.
Open season, that sounds alarming. What exactly was he worried about?
Well, he feared that if police can search a car just because the people inside are passengers, it could lead to abuse and discrimination.
I see.
Think about it. A car full of people gets pulled over for, like, a broken taillight.
Yeah.
Under this standard, could the police search the whole car just because they know the passengers probably can't challenge it because of Rocco's?
So the dissent was essentially arguing that the Fourth Amendment should protect people, not just property. Your right to privacy shouldn't disappear just because you're riding in someone else's car.
Exactly. They felt the majority went too far in favor of law enforcement at the expense of individual liberties, and they painted a grim picture of where that could lead.
This is all very complex. So we've got the majority focusing on property rights and less privacy in cars. Then the dissenting justice is worried about losing personal liberties. But wasn't there another opinion? What about Justice Powell's concurring opinion? Where did he stand on this issue?
Justice Powell. His opinion is really interesting because he agreed with the outcome
Okay.
that the passengers couldn't challenge the search, but he wasn't totally on board with the majority's reasoning.
Oh, how so?
He agreed that cars generally have a lower expectation of privacy, but he stressed that it's not a black and white rule.
I see.
He emphasized looking at the totality of circumstances to figure out if someone has reasonable expectation of privacy in a specific situation.
Okay.
He wasn't ready to completely ditch the Fourth Amendment when it came to cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was particularly worried about what this could mean for passengers.
Uh-huh.
He made a list of different things that could lead to less privacy in a car.
Right.
But he also emphasized that it's not automatic.
Mm.
He wanted to make sure there was still some Fourth Amendment protection for people just riding in a vehicle.
So even though he agreed with the majority in this case,
mm-hmm.
he was kind of sending a warning, right? Like, don't just blindly accept less privacy in cars.
Exactly. He was saying be careful because this decision could have really big consequences. And his concerns seem even more important now when you think about how much technology has changed.
Yeah. This case happened way back in 78, long before smartphones, GPS tracking, and all the data our cars are collecting now.
Right.
It makes those dissenting justices' warnings about a slippery slope seem pretty spot on, doesn't it?
It really does.
It did.
Ruckus basically lowered the bar for searching cars, and now we have all this tech that could be used to chip away at our privacy even more. It makes you wonder how the legitimate expectation of privacy standard should change in this digital age.
Okay, so let's bring this back to the listener for a second. Think about how Ruckus v. Illinois changes how you think about privacy when you're in a car. Do you feel like you have a reasonable expectation of privacy as a passenger?
Yeah, would your answer change if you were ride-sharing?
Mm.
Or borrowing a friend's car? These are the kind of everyday situations where Ruckus really matters.
It definitely makes you think, right?
Yeah.
And it's not even just about cars anymore. We carry our phones everywhere, which track our every move.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us have smart devices at home that are always collecting data. It feels like the lines between public and private are getting blurrier and blurrier.
Absolutely. The Ruckus decision was a product of its time, but its effects are still being felt. It reminds us that technology often moves faster than the law, and we're still figuring out how to protect our privacy in this constantly changing world.
So after all this legal stuff and philosophical debate, what are the key takeaways from Ruckus v. Illinois? What should our listener remember?
Well, first and foremost, Ruckus established that passengers in a car don't automatically have the same level of Fourth Amendment protection as the driver or the owner.
Okay.
The court really hammered home that cars are unique because they're mobile, visible, and subject to lots of regulations.
So if you're a passenger, your right to challenge a search is limited. It seems like the court was trying to find a balance between protecting individual rights and letting law enforcement do their jobs. But the dissenting judges clearly felt they crossed a line, didn't they?
Yeah, they were really worried that this decision could weaken basic privacy rights and create opportunities for abuse, especially for people who are already marginalized or targeted by the police. And those concerns are even more relevant today with all the surveillance technology out there and all the data being collected about where we go and what we do.
It sounds like Ruckus v. Illinois was a turning point, but it also opened up a whole bunch of questions about privacy in a world that's getting more and more connected and technologically driven.
That's a great way to put it. It's a case that keeps coming back to haunt us in a way, because it makes us think about those fundamental tensions between safety and freedom, between the rights of individuals and the power of the government. And those tensions are only going to get more complicated as technology keeps changing.
You know, as we were getting ready for this deep dive, I came across this quote from Justice Rehnquist's majority opinion. He wrote, "Arcane distinctions developed in property and tort law between guests, licensees, invitees, and the like ought not to control." What did he mean by that, and why is it so important?
That's a really thought-provoking quote, and I think it gets at what the court was wrestling with. They were trying to apply these old legal concepts to a modern problem, the automobile. And Rehnquist seems to be saying that the old rules based on strict categories of property ownership just don't work in this new setting. He's admitting that the world has changed and the law needs to catch up.
But isn't that always the problem? Technology moves at warp speed while the law creeps along.
Exactly. And we see that tension play out over and over, whether we're talking about privacy and cars regulating the internet or the ethical questions around artificial intelligence. We're always playing catch up, trying to figure out how to apply old principles to new situations. And cases like Ruckus really make us confront those basic questions.
So even though this case was decided almost 50 years ago, it still feels really relevant today.
Absolutely. And that's partly because Ruckus wasn't just about cars. It was about the bigger question of what a reasonable expectation of privacy means in a world that's always changing. And that question is more important than ever in the digital age.
You know, something that struck me about the Ruckus decision was how much the court focused on how unique automobiles are. They really went into detail about why cars are different from homes when it comes to privacy. They pointed out how cars are mobile, often seen by others, and subject to tons of rules.
They even mentioned how cars are often parked in public, how easy it is to see inside them, and how they need to be fixed in public garages. It's like they were saying that just by driving or riding in a car, you're basically giving up some level of privacy. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's like they were acknowledging that driving is so common and regulating it is tough. But they also seem to be hinting that when you choose to drive, you're kind of accepting that you'll have less privacy.
It's a tricky balance for sure. On one hand, we want to protect people's privacy, but we also need to make sure law enforcement can do their job effectively.
Right. And that tension becomes even more complicated when you factor in all the new tech we have today. Like, think about all the ways our privacy is potentially being eroded by things like GPS tracking facial recognition software and those license plate readers they have everywhere.
It's definitely a lot to think about. And I think it highlights how important it is to have these conversations, to really examine the trade-offs we're making between security and privacy, and to make sure we're not sacrificing our fundamental rights in the name of progress.
Absolutely. We need to be aware of the potential downsides of technology, and we need to make sure the laws are keeping pace with these advancements so our rights are protected.
So it seems like Ruckus v. Illinois, while a case about cars, really opened a Pandora's box of questions about privacy in a world that's changing faster than we can imagine.
You got it. It's a case that keeps on giving. It forces us to confront these tough questions about the balance between individual rights and the powers of the government. And those questions are only going to become more urgent as technology keeps evolving.
Okay, so to wrap things up, what's the one key message you want our listeners to take away from this deep dive into Ruckus v. Illinois?
I think the most important thing to remember is that privacy is not a static concept. It's something that's constantly being redefined and renegotiated, especially in our digital age.
Right. It's not a given. It's something we have to actively protect and be mindful of.
Exactly. We need to be aware of how our data is being collected, used, and shared. We need to be thoughtful about the technologies we embrace, and we need to hold those in power accountable for safeguarding our privacy.
Well said. I think that's a perfect note to end on. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive into Ruckus v. Illinois. It's been a fascinating journey, and I hope our listeners will continue to explore these important issues.
Thanks for having me. It's been a great conversation.